Well, Monica did such a nice job with the children there. She really nailed the message, so I think we're about done. Although then I would feel sad and unappreciated, so I guess you're going to have to hear the sermon anyway. And if you do, then you might as well take some notes. So find your sermon notes for this morning. You can follow along. You can fill in the blanks. But more importantly, take it home with you. Reflect on this week. And continue then to be encouraged by God's Word. So the first question, are you thirsty? You know, getting a drink of water is something that we take for granted. I brought mine along this morning, as I usually do. I can just take a little sip whenever I get thirsty. Easy to do. There's a couple water fountains down the hallways. Sometimes we just take a drink when we go by them, just out of habit, not because we're all that thirsty. We can pop open the Coke or the soda can, the pop, get that juice box out of the fridge. You know, even our refrigerators nowadays, you can just go to most of them and they have a button or something you just push and there it is. Water is so available. So what's the big deal? And what's the big deal about getting water? Well, I guess it depends. If you're a three-year-old, and I remember when my boys were three, and they would get up in the middle of the night, and they would come knock on the door to the bedroom, and they would say, "Dad, I'm thirsty. Could I get a drink?" Now, it's no big deal if I just go get it for them, is it? Like most good parents would. But if I said, "Sure, you can have a drink. All you got to do is go downstairs, and then when you get to the cabinet, you know, get a chair from the kitchen and climb up there and find just the right size glass for you. You can't use one of the glass ones, but one of those little plastic ones, and they're way in the back, and find that, and then climb down and go over to the refrigerator and press the right button." That would be a big deal. In fact, most three-year-olds would not be able to do that. Or if you're in the hospital, any of you been in the hospital, had surgery, you know what it's like? You know, it's traumatizing to the body to have surgery. Not only that, you're weak. You've been lying in bed. You know, the muscles are beginning to atrophy. You know, you ask the nurse, "Can I have just a few ice chips or something?" And she says, "Well, just go get them yourself." And then you got to get out of bed, which is hard to do with that rail thing on there, trying to climb over that. And then you got to hold on to the pole because you have an IV in here, and who knows what else, wires and tubes, and you're trying to walk. And she says it's just you know, two halls down to the left, and then go up the stairs, and then on the right, and you'll find the ice chest. And you're trying to get along with that pole and make sure you're not exposed in the back. You know, that's not only a big deal, that's impossible, right? So getting a drink of water, we take it for granted. So what's the big deal now? You know, Jesus, in those days, you go to the well. Every town, every village has a well, usually right in the center. It's the place where all the social things occur. You know, it's like, you know, soccer games for soccer moms today. I know you really don't go just to watch your kids play, to catch up on the gossip. I know this. So that's what they're doing. They're all coming together. So what's the big deal? Well, it is a big deal. As you heard from Monica, this is a Samaritan woman. And that's the first key. She's from Samaria. She's a Samaritan. And Jews and Samaritans do not get along. In fact, they more than do not get along, they hate each other. I mean, this is worse than Cardinals and Cubs. Worse. This is worse than Packers and Bears. This is worse than the Hatfield and the McCoys. They can't even remember anymore why they hate each other. They've been hating each other for so long. You see, 700 years before this, the Assyrians, they had come and they had invaded Israel, the northern kingdom. And they'd carried away half the people. And they had this great strategy. They watered down the culture. They watered down the religion. They watered down the culture so that people would not rise up and rebel. So they brought in pagans, non-Jews. And they worshipped idols, whatever they could carve, bronze, iron, wood, stone. Now, in 700 years, a lot of those idols, most of those idols, had been put away. But they now had this idea that the only place that they could worship was on Mount Gerizim in Samaria, this mountain Jesus had talked about. Only place God appeared, so they thought. And the Jews, of course, said, no, no, you have to go down to Jerusalem, to the temple. That's the proper place. So Samaritans would not associate, they would not talk. They would not marry. They would not be seen with a Jew. And the Jews know better. You know, if we had a map, you've got Judea in the south, where Jerusalem is, then Samaria in the middle, Galilee in the north. What makes sense if you want to go from Judea to Galilee, go in a straight line? No. Because Jews would not set foot in Samaria. They would go across the Jordan River, go all the way up through Syria and then around. It was forbidden for Jews to associate with Samaritans to the point that you couldn't drink out of the same utensil. You couldn't eat with the same utensils. It was akin to touching a dead body, taboo also in those days, or a leper. So, big deal. She's a Samaritan. And she's a she, by the way. She's a woman. Oh, no big deal today. Happens all the time. We have conversations. But not in those days. It's very much like the Muslim Arab culture today. Women can't talk to men unless it's their husband. Only your husband, and even then, it's three steps behind and two to the left. Hard to have a conversation that way. Can't talk to men. Big deal. She's a woman. She's Samaritan. But then number three, strike number three, really, she's an outcast. Remember, well, social gathering. This is where everybody gets together. Do you remember what time of the day it is? Anybody? Sixth hour. When is that? It's noon. Noon. See, Jewish day starts at 6 in the morning. 6 in the morning, sixth hour, it's noon. In July, let's say, when's it hotter, 6 in the morning or noon? Noon. So if you're going to go to the well and you're going to have to carry large jars of water, several miles perhaps, when are you going to go? In the morning when it's cool, or in the evening when it's cool. You don't go at noon, so why is she there at noon? She doesn't want to meet all the other women, because they're going to gossip about her. They're still going to gossip about her, but she doesn't want to be there to hear it. So three strikes, a Samaritan, a woman, an outcast. Big deal. Well, here's a really big deal, the bigger deal, the biggest deal. It's not just the woman, it's who does she meet? Not just a Jew, not just a rabbi, not just a man. The Son of God. God! That's a big deal. And he's going to tell her, you know, this water, you can drink this all the time, you're going to have to drink more. You're going to have to drink more today, you're going to have to drink more tomorrow, the next day, the day after that. I'm going to give you a different kind of water. You drink once, and that's it. Not earthly, it's heavenly. It's not temporal. It's eternal. It's spiritual. He'll fill your soul. It's the water of life. Really, really big deal. So that, then, is our second question. How is your thirst quenched, and not your physical thirst? You see, our souls have a thirst that yearns to be quenched, every single one of us. All human beings, we have this yearning. We need more. We know that life is a lot more than just what meets the eye. There's got to be. I mean, if this is it, it's got to be more. And so we look, we search, we yearn. And some look to the water of wealth. If I get this thing, then I'll be fulfilled. Whatever that thing is. How does that work? You have your thing, whatever your thing is, your goal, your dream, your ambition. What often happens when you achieve that thing, when you get that thing? You want another thing. First thing wasn't enough. So some look to the water of wealth. They think if I just have another zero in my bank account or in my salary, then I'll be in control finally. You know that on average that from your first job to the time that you retire, your highest salary is on average 7 times more than the first one? 7 times. And yet it's not often enough. See, here's the problem. How many of you would like to be in control in life? Wouldn't that be great? Control of everything? Control of everything. Does that ever happen? No, never happens. Never happens. Especially when you have kids. As soon as they get to talk, you're not in control. So some look to the water of wealth, and yet they find it's never enough. They have to drink more from that kind of water. Well, others, they look to the pleasures of the world, go from one thing to the next. Others, they look to relationships, like the woman. She thinks she's not enough. She thinks she can find enough in her husband. But the first one wasn't enough, the second one wasn't enough, the third one wasn't enough, the fourth one wasn't enough, the fifth one wasn't enough. The sixth one, pretty sure won't be enough. So our souls have a thirst that yearns to be quenched. None of these things, and you could fill whatever you wanted to in the blank, none of those things are ever enough. So Jesus says your thirst is only quenched by one thing, and that's the water of life. And he says, I am he. I am the Messiah. I am the one that you've been looking for. St. Augustine put it this way, the soul will not rest until it rests in God, which makes sense, doesn't it? Who created us? God. In whose image were we created? God. And so our soul will not rest until it rests in God. Now, it really gets interesting at this point when you look at the whole story. You know, Jesus asks for water. You know, he tells her that, you know, he's the creator of the well, not Jacob, not the ancestors. And she says, wow, I'd love to get this kind of water. Where do I get it? He says, I am he. And she says, well, can I get some of this stuff? I don't want to keep having to come to the well all the time. And what does he say? He says, come here and bring your husband. I mean, why? Why can't you get it on her own? And why does he have to bring up the other five? It's to make a point. And here's the point. The water of life, is there for the asking. It's there. All you got to do is ask. That's it. Remember, this is a woman with 3 strikes. Samaritan, a woman, an outcast. Jesus is saying it's not necessary to first clean up your life. You don't have to worry about any of that other stuff, he says. Just drink of the water. So if a Samaritan woman with 3 strikes against her can simply ask for the water of life, what does that say about you and me? Can we just ask? Yes. No matter where you are in your journey, no matter what you have done, no matter what your sin, no matter what you think is an obstacle between you and God, he says, just ask. And it's yours. I want to give it to you. Just ask. Paul writes and says this, for while we were still weak, at the right time, Christ died for the ungodly. God proves his love for us in that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. And so once we drink of him in faith, life is ours. Go ahead and put up the next couple of lines up there. I want you to see something. Continue right there. Letter E. What's the number there? One. Circle that. Once we drink of Him in faith, life is ours. It's ours. We had such a wonderful object lesson at our last service at 9:30. I just love baptisms. Little Maxwell received the water of life. Now I know in baptism it's just on the outside. What we don't see is the inside. For most of us, that's when we received our water of life, wasn't it? The object lesson is so great because we know babies can't do anything for themselves. Maxwell was just there. He didn't clean up his life. He didn't dress himself. He didn't even change his diaper. And yet the water of life was his. Simply by the asking of his parents. Once we receive it, it's ours. It's ours. It's always there. You know, ironically, as we think of physical water and we think of drinking and being thirsty, there was another time when Jesus asked for a drink. Do you remember when that was? Also about the sixth hour, wasn't it? And the Bible tells us that he was very thirsty. And he says, I thirst. Baking in the hot sun. Not just baking, but hanging in the hot sun. And not just hanging, but hanging on a cross. And not just hanging there, but nailed there. And not just physically by nails, but by all of our sin. He had been beaten within an inch of his life, literally. He had a crown of thorns there on his head, bleeding profusely, gasping for breath. And he says, with what little strength he has left, I thirst. And he didn't get a nice pure bottle of water. He didn't get a Coke. Didn't get a nice juice box. But some sour wine vinegar thrust up to his lips by a stick. It's an old dirty sponge. Here, drink this. So how do we keep from getting thirsty again? Well, Jesus promised a well of eternal flowing water. And he suffered thirst there on the cross. That we might never be thirsty again. And then he urges us to drink of him. And as we do, and as I reminded the family earlier with little Maxwell, it doesn't mean that we're never going to sin. If you've ever had a baby, you know that they do that repeatedly. And so do we. But once we've drunk of the living water, once we have received that gift of life, the well continues to spring up within us. And each day we are cleansed. And so it's my prayer for all of you that each day you would remember your baptism, you would remember the water that flows within you, the gift of God that He's given, of His grace. That there is no obstacle that can ever separate you, no sin that God cannot forgive. And that you would gather together regularly to be reminded that you would come to the table to be strengthened. And then finally, that you would not keep this living water to yourself, but that you would share it with others, and not just in this room, but in your community. In your neighborhood, in your schools, in your businesses, with your friends and your relatives. And if you come back next week, I'll tell you exactly how to do it. May God grant that we would remember the living water that wells up inside of us, and may we gladly share it with others.